These people who are disconnected from time do not age at anything like the rate that the rest of us do. Beyond belief is where we need to go, and it's a whole new state of being, and I'm not claiming to be there yet, but I am saying that's where I want to head as rapidly as possible. So all these things that we experience as, well, that's the way life is made, people get older, they're illusions, they are generated by our belief in the fact that people get older. This world you think is around you, it's inside you, and you know something? You're creating it on what you accept to be real. The road to freedom is to take control of that process back, so we understand we're creating our own reality. Don't believe anything. Belief is a manifestation of mind, and mind compared with spirit is ignorance.
Hey, David, how are you doing?
But I hit up to 9 million last month.
9 million?
9 million, yeah.
Wow, that's great. You know, that's what I was going to tell you, too. I've been watching my stats as I go along for a long time, and consistently people are listening to the interviews that you and I are doing thousands of times more than, like, all the other interviews combined. So I found that interesting.
It's a strange phenomenon.
Well, it's interesting because the more they try to make people not listen, the more they're going to listen. Apparently.
I know. I know. I mean, they never learned that, really. Something they never seem to learn, because I think they're so panic-stricken at any information getting out. But instead of being laid back about it, they do and make efforts to stop it, which just gives it credibility. It makes people more interested in it. It's just silly, really, isn't it?
Yeah,
they're not
exactly.
Very bright. They're clever, but they're not bright. There is a difference.
I imagine that right now you're feeling a bit like Alice, tumbling down the rabbit hole.
The phone call I got about you was not even in response to anything scheduled or anything. It was just literally out of the blue. Oh, by the way, I just wanted to mention David X. Ban from CPAN and Jump.
Welcome to the real world.
You know, no reason. That first phone call, when I first started the show,
right.
We hadn't even booked anything yet. I think they may have seen that we had done something in the past online, but we hadn't even scheduled anything or nothing had happened. Or, you know, there was no obvious prompting for the phone call. It was literally out of the blue. And then when they called, they just said, oh, by the way, you know, David Icke's band. I've certainly never had that call about anybody else, and I have a lot of people that say a lot.
Free your mind.
I did an interview just before Christmas, I think, with a Toronto program on Mojo Radio or something.
Okay.
Cloak and Dagger. And a guy called, he has a presenter name and a real name. I know him as Nelson. Anyway, the Simon Wiesenthal Center contacted the radio station and the hate police in Toronto, demanding that my interview not be allowed to be broadcast. And the producer of the show refused. Ironically, a Jewish guy, Nelson, and the radio station stood by the interview as well, and about 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, the Mojo Radio dropped the show, despite its ratings.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, not just the show you were on, but the whole show's gone?
Yeah, the whole show's gone, yeah.
Wow.
It's now, it's running on the internet now.
Wow. That's amazing. Jeez. What is it about Canada?
It was like when there was a protest in 1999. They tried to stop all my speaking events in eastern Canada, in Ottawa, and where I was stopped at Customs and Immigration and kept there till 2 o'clock in the morning, in Toronto and in Windsor. And the one venue that held, because all the others didn't, against the onslaught was the Toronto University of Toronto, because the guy who ran it, the dean or whatever you call him, he said people may not agree with what this man says, although of course they had no idea what I was saying. They were just were hearing what I was supposed to be saying, but they might not agree with it, but he has every right to speak and every right to have his freedom. And literally a few weeks later, a month later, he resigned by mutual consent. And went off to work somewhere else, and he was a youngish man. He wasn't.
Dodge this.
not something that was expected. So he came in for tremendous pressure to, and he stopped me speaking there, and he refused. And of course, the Jewish hierarchy, self-appointed, were invited to the talk. They came along, and there was no problem. I wasn't having to go at Jewish people, funnily enough, not least because I never do. And even though they saw what I was saying, the next time the same thing happens. Because this has nothing to do with what I'm saying in terms of Jewish people. It's to do with what I'm saying in terms of the bigger picture. And we had an MP here called Tony Benn who used to say, in America they assassinate you and in Britain they assassinate your character. Well, there's another kind of division between that, and that's which of the two will be most effective. Assassinating the guy, okay, well he's got all these books out here, I'll give him tremendous credibility and all that stuff. So we'll go for assassinating his character, which is probably more effective, and that's what I've been going through all these years. Canada's the worst of all, really.
Well, that's what it seems like.
Up to this point.
Why is that?
Because there's this guy, Richard Warman, who is a lawyer stroke investigator with the Canadian Human Rights Commission. He was a Green Party, a non-entity before, and he has been at the forefront since 99, stopping me speaking in Canada. And he's moved from the Green Party, which was he used as his vehicle to stop me, try to stop me, to now the Canadian Human Rights Commission, which is, you've got a situation where the new Canadian Justice Minister, Erwin Kotler, is the former head of the Canadian Jewish Congress, which is the organization that has most supported Richard Warman's campaigns, and indeed was at the forefront of the campaign that I've just described to stop me speaking at Toronto, etc. There's the network in Canada that is pulling the strings of the legal and governmental decision-making that is not in any way working towards the benefit of Canadians, and neither, ironically and grotesquely, are they working towards the benefit of Jewish people as a whole. They're not. It's an agenda in which, over the centuries, Jewish people have suffered as much and sometimes more than anyone. So what do you want to talk about today? One of the things that really hit me when the penny really dropped on how we create reality and how simple it is. I realized that the way society is structured is actually genius, because it looks a mess, it looks chaotic, it looks ridiculous, but if you want the outcome of a population under your control, it is genius the way it's been set up.
So what is your view?
Well, over the last year to 18 months, the way that I've been working and the way that life has been pushing me has been almost entirely into the realms of what is reality, how do we create it, and most significantly in relation to the research into the conspiracy that I've been doing all these years, how is our sense of reality manipulated to make us easier to control? And in January of last year, I reached the point where I decided I was going to see if I could experience other realms of existence, other realms of reality, and observe this one from that point of observation. Because as the years have unfolded and I've been doing more and more of this, if you like, five-sense research, names, dates, places, connections into the global agenda for this centralized world fascist state that I've been talking about all these years, which is now unfolding, of course, in front of our eyes, I started to realize that I could only go so far with that, because there were other levels to this, and certainly those other levels contain the solutions to all these five-sense manipulations that I was coming across. I remember saying to my wife when I was coming to the end of the book before the last one, Alice in Wonderland and the World Trade Center Disaster, that if I was going to go to the next stage of understanding all this, I had to experience other realms, not in some dream state in sleep. Like, did I really experience that? I can't quite remember what it was. I think this is what happened, but actually in solid awareness. And as coincidence would have it, I was invited just after I finished that book to go to the Amazon rainforest in January 2003 and take something called ayahuasca, which is a rainforest plant, which they turn into what they call a tea, and shaman in South America have been using it for centuries, at least centuries, to take people into other realms of reality. And I could have taken it about four times, but I took it twice, and it was an experience, particularly the second night, that completely transformed my view of life. What it did was take my intellectual understanding that the world is an illusion into the realms of knowing it's an illusion, and there's a difference between intellectually understanding it's an illusion and this level of knowing it because you've experienced it. I got to the age of 50 without taking a single magic mushroom. I never even had one smoke of pot or anything. I've never taken any of the stuff. But I just felt that the synchronicity of this whole situation, I was going to go with it. So I took it. And on the first night, I took this tea, which tastes a bit like licorice, it seemed to me. And for about 2 hours or so, I went into other realms, and some amazing things happened. First of all, I felt this enormous energy coming out of the heart chakra area, or into the heart chakra area, and then out again in an arc to my head. And it was so clear, feeling that arc of energy from my heart chakra to my head, and another energy coming into the heart chakra. I was in this dark room, just me and a guy who was observing me, who is an expert in this whole ayahuasca stuff. And suddenly, out of nowhere, the strip light came on, and then a second one, and then a third one. The energy in the room was extraordinary. And I remember lying there, because what happens when you take ayahuasca is that when you close your eyes, you go into another realm. When you open them, you're back in five-sense reality. And it's very, very interesting to observe the two. What happens, however, is that your eyes don't want to stay open that long. They want to close, so you go back to where you were. But I remember opening my eyes and seeing these strip lights coming on and thinking, what the heck is the guy turning the lights on for? And it turns out he hadn't touched the strip lights at all. They'd come on their own, and then the music he was playing, that kept stopping and starting without him doing anything to it. So there was a tremendous energy in the room. And over that night, and particularly the second night, where I went into this other state of awareness for like 5 hours, a voice spoke to me, a very clear female voice, or the female form it took, as clear as mine is now, in which it talked to me for all these hours about the nature of reality and how we create it. It was pointing out that this world we think is real is actually an illusion generated by our minds, not least generated by our belief in what is real. Basically, what we believe to be real is what we experience as real. But it's just a figment of our imagination. And the matrix, as I refer to it, and the voice referred to it as the matrix as well, is actually a gigantic thought form which we've got caught in. And what's catching us in the web, if you like, is that we think that what we're experiencing here and what we're seeing is real. And as it was pointing out, the only difference between the dreams we have in sleep and the dream we're having now is we take this dream to be real. And illusions can only control us when we think they're real. When we know they're illusions, they lose their control over us. And so we're living in a world that is so similar to the world portrayed in the first Matrix movie, a world in which we're literally in a dream world that we think is real. And what happened, and there was hours and hours of this stuff, which I detail in Time Loop, Tales from the Time Loop, but when I came back to England, I started looking at quantum physics and psychological research in the mainstream of science, if you like, to see if there was a correlation between what this voice had told me in this other state of awareness and what we call mainstream science. And I found the two correlated incredibly. The thing about science is that people don't talk to each other. So this area of research establishes this information, and over here somewhere else in another discipline or in another place, this area of research comes to this conclusion that this information is true, but they don't talk to each other. And so this idea that this world is a solid, is real, and is the only world that exists is still the prevailing idea that comes out of science as a whole. When you look at the individual areas of research within it, the fact that this world is an illusion is already a provable fact. For instance, the room that is around me now is made up of atoms, this so-called solid wall. Well, when you look at the inside of an atom, it's about as empty, from our reality anyway, it's about as empty as anything you can get. I read one physicist pointing out that if you take an atom to be the size of a cathedral, then the particles within it are about the size of a 10-cent piece. The rest is, in this reality, empty space. And therefore, how can something that is almost entirely not solid make up the solid wall that's in front of me now? It can't. Our minds do it. And the real point when big pennies started to drop for me was when I read of the research that shows that the only place that this world, this room that I'm in now, the room you're in and the room the listeners are in, the only place it exists is actually in the brain. It doesn't exist outside of us, it's inside of us. Because when information enters the eyes, it's in nothing like the form that we think we're looking at. First of all, it's upside down, it's two-dimensional, and it's in a very different form to the world we think we're looking at. What then happens is this information travels through the brain to the visual cortex at the back. The visual cortex is where this world actually exists in movie form, if you like. We create it. And as the information passes through different levels of the brain, from the eyes to the visual cortex, a massive editing process takes place, in which, according to some research, up to and sometimes more than 50% of the information that enters the eyes is changed. Detail is taken out that is there, and detail is put in that isn't there. And what they found is that this editing process is done on the basis of that person's belief in what is real. So information enters the eyes, goes through the editing caused by the belief, and by the time it hits the visual cortex in the brain and registers as this world we think is around us, it is a world that is based on our belief in what is real. And once you start to realize that we are what we believe and we experience what we believe, a very simple equation follows. He who controls the belief controls the experience. And what we've done as a human race is we have conceded our right to create our reality, and instead we are creating an externally implanted sense of reality. And one of the things that I did in researching Time Loop was to go and see stage hypnotists at work, and that is precisely the situation that we face. This conspiracy that I've been talking about all these years, at its foundation, and without which it couldn't prosper, is the manipulation of our sense of reality. And they do it in precisely the same way that a stage hypnotist does it. The hypnotist gets the subjects on the stage, and he implants into their subconscious a belief in what is real, i.e. there's a giraffe in the audience, the woman next to them is naked. And that belief then dictates the subject's sense of reality. So what happens is that the information enters the eyes of the subject, of course without a giraffe in the audience and with the woman next to them fully clothed. But then it goes through the editing process of the implanted belief by the hypnotist, and it then rearranges reality on the basis of that belief, and it puts the elephant in the room, and it takes the clothes off the lady next to them. So by the time the information hits the visual cortex and becomes what we think we're looking at, that reality is rearranged. And when you think about it, we have a stage hypnotist in the corner of every room called the television. We have stage hypnotists giving our children and young people a version of reality, a belief in what is real, in what we laughingly call the education system. Once people as a whole take on this implanted belief in what is real, they then confirm to people around them that what they are looking at is actually true. It is real because I can see it too. And then along comes a few people who have gone beyond that and have realized it's an illusion. And they're basically saying to them, hey, there's not an elephant in the room. Honest, there's not. And they look at such people and they go, you're mad. What do you mean there's no elephant in the room? I can see it, mate. Don't be silly. And you see this editing of reality all the time. I remember seeing a television program a few years ago in which they were highlighting how difficult it is for men to communicate with women and vice versa. And what they did was they got a man and a woman partners together, and they got them to talk to each other while they were being filmed. They then took them away individually and asked them what the other person said and the tone in which it was said, and then they played back to them the conversation as recorded, and both were shocked. I think it wasn't just one couple, it was a number of them. They were shocked to see that how they had perceived what the other one said and how was nothing like what was said and how it was put. It, because once we have, even on an individual basis, a belief in a person and what we think of that person and what we think that person's motives are, as they speak and act, we are editing them, what they say and do, on the basis of our belief in what they are, and therefore what we see are only things that confirm our belief instead of the other way around. So this whole process of how we create reality is at the very forefront, Nicole, of what I'm doing now, because it is the bottom line of how we're controlled, and it is the front line of how we take our power back and literally think this control and conspiracy and prison out of existence and think and, if you like, believe another existence into reality.
So how exactly can we think something, for example, a solid image? How do we think our way through that to know
it's
there?
Well, you don't just have to think it away. You can experience it while being aware of what it is. And what, in other words, you can use the illusion to your benefit instead of letting the illusion use you. As I've said in my books, we need to live life and not let life live us. What happens for most people is life lives them, and they're just basically sheep in a pen or sheep following someone in front instead of them dictating their own reality and their own experience. And we don't do it overwhelmingly because we don't believe, because of the information we get from cradle to grave, that we have the power to do it. Therefore, we don't do it. This is why we are bombarded constantly throughout our experience, our lives here, with negative things about ourselves, like we're ordinary men and women in the street. We have no power. We can't do it. We can't do this. We can't do that. We live in an I can't society. It may masquerade as a you can society, but the you can bit is as long as you operate within the parameters of the matrix, of the illusion. Once you start challenging the illusion, excuse me, over here, we're not having that, and suddenly you realize it's an I can't society. So if you take on the belief, for instance, that you are ordinary and powerless, then you are going to experience ordinary and powerless lives, because that's what you're going to create. That's what you're going to experience. Whatever the information coming in through the eyes, you are going to edit that to support the belief that you are ordinary and powerless. See? See? Nothing happens to me. Look, nothing ever happens to me. It always goes wrong. Oh, I don't know. Nothing ever happens in my life. Well, of course, if that's your belief, then you are basically putting blocks all over the place to stop anything manifesting in your life. You know, it's interesting when you talk to people and you say to them, what do you want to do with your life? And they go, I don't know, really. And when you observe their lives are a daily expression of, I don't know, really. Nothing ever happens. Nothing of any different happens. Nothing exciting happens. Nothing manifests that takes them in a direction. It's just, I don't know, really. And that's what every day follows every other day, because that's what they're creating. And this is the real information. All right, of course the Illuminati don't want us to know about their secret society network. They don't want us to know about the agenda for the global fascist state, the Big Brother Society. Of course they don't want us to know that. But the biggest, biggest, biggest thing they don't want us to know is that we are creating our own reality, and that we have the power to create a reality that's a paradise or a reality that's a prison or somewhere in between. We are the ones with the power, because we are generating the experience and the world we think is around us when it's really within us.
Illuminati, a secret society do exist. Illuminati.
And that's the power that will set us free. This is why they have worked so hard to suppress it. They want us to believe that we're ordinary and powerless. They want us to believe that this world is solid and the only world that there is. Or there is some God sitting in paradise, and only if you do as you're told, according to the rules and regulations in this solid world, do you go to paradise afterwards. All these things are used to disconnect us from the fact that we are generating our own reality, and it's an illusion. It's in a dream world. Now, we can generate a nice dream in which we have power over our own destiny and we live in a paradise, or we can generate a nightmare in which we are ordinary, powerless, and are controlled by the few to a very, very dark agenda, which is one we're currently, on the whole, choosing to create. But we don't have to. We can change it any time we want. And one of the things that this voice in Brazil was emphasizing is the fact that the world that we think is around us is a thought form that has disconnected us from our awareness that actually there is only one consciousness, what it called oneness or the infinite. When the voice first started speaking to me on the second night, it said, like I say, as clear as I'm speaking now, there's really only one thing you need to know. Infinite love is the only truth. Everything else is illusion. And it said it over and over again. Infinite love is the only truth. Everything else is illusion. And what it went on to explain is that everything is one infinite consciousness. That's the only truth. Everything else is the imagination manifested by that consciousness. And it talked about the fact that when you are in a state of oneness in awareness of itself, you are in a state that is very different to the one we're experiencing here, which is still oneness, it's still the same consciousness, but it's become disconnected from the awareness that it is one consciousness. And that disconnection has created a world, and we continually underpin that world by believing in the fact that there is division between things, there's division between people, duality, that everything is not one, that I am different to you, and I am different to that wall in terms of the one consciousness. And what it said to me is that imagine a river with a whirlpool, an eddy in the river. The whirlpool is still part of the river, but it is a self-contained entity within it. And although this matrix, which it said in the end is a vortex, although we're still part of the one consciousness, we have lost the understanding of that, and therefore we live lives based on a belief, here we go again, that there is no one consciousness, and basically it's every person for themselves, and it's all division, and it's all us against them, and it's all duality. Mm-hmm. And it was saying that understanding that we are all one conscious is something that we are seeking to return to, and it is the thing over everything else that the manipulators are seeking to deny us the understanding of. They want us to believe in duality. They want us to believe that we're all divided, that we're all single entities, if you like, because that is a recipe for limitless conflict and limitless divide and rule, because the fault lines to divide us all are infinite when you believe in that sense of reality. If, for instance, the Palestinian suicide bomber realized that he is the same consciousness as those he is bombing, and the Israeli soldiers that shoot Palestinian children realize that not only are they Israeli soldiers, they are also the Palestinian children, start to take on a different vision of both yourself and those apparent people, illusions, that you are dealing with. Once you think that you are one and they are the other, then, like I say, the potential for conflict and war and what have you is infinite. So it's in the Illuminati's interest, in fact it's fundamental to them, to keep us stuck in the belief that all is not one, but all is just divided bits. And, you know, this voice was very, very emphasized constantly, the fact that what has created the Matrix is that we have forgotten that we are all one.
To divide and conquer.
And interestingly, just a quick one, it said something very interesting to me. It said, if it vibrates, it's illusion. And because of where I went in this other state of reality, I understood what it was saying. Where I went was a place that did not vibrate. It was a place of unbelievable bliss, where there was no fear, there was no worry, there was no guilt, or any of this stuff that holds us in the prison here. And it was just a state in which I was still self-aware as a, quote, individual, but there was no point where I ended and everything else began. And it did not vibrate. It was still this realm that I went to that the voice told me was oneness. It said to me, this is where you come from, and this is where you're coming back to. And by bringing you here in awareness, you can have a greater understanding of the illusion you're living. And it was at most, in terms of movement, I experienced it sometimes as a very slow moving, like a wave on the sea in slow motion, but very, very slow. There was no vibration. And what it said was this, when we talk about oneness, we don't mean anything other than oneness. Everything is one. Therefore, there's not two onenesses. There's only one. And for something to vibrate, it needs two polarities of oscillation between which it can oscillate, vibrate. So it said it's only in the realm of duality, illusion, that you have things that vibrate. In the realm of oneness and awareness of itself, it is stillness because there's nothing for it to vibrate between, because there's only one. And it's interesting that when people talk about spirituality and stuff like that, they talk about the stillness of the heart. They talk about going to a place of stillness, and that's this place of oneness and awareness of itself. We are in a world of oneness that's lost that awareness, and therefore it's a world of duality, and therefore it's a world of vibration. And it's not just this realm of reality that I refer to as the five sense world that is the matrix, if you like. There are many, many non-physical levels of the matrix to which consciousness returns between experiences in this realm, this five sense realm, and that although consciousness on those realms is more aware, in the sense, of course, it understands that this world that we're living in now is not the only one there is, it's still within the matrix, it's still within the illusion, and it's still within the belief that what it's experiencing is real. And it was pointing out that a lot of the stuff, not all of it by any means, some psychics and visionaries can get beyond the realm of vibration out into the realm of oneness and bring that knowledge in. But a lot of the psychics, this voice was talking about, the overwhelming majority, are actually not connecting outside of the realm of vibration into oneness. They're actually connecting with different levels of vibrational realm that we call the matrix, or the different levels of it. And it was pointing out that when you have psychics on television shows and they're saying, or stage shows, when they're saying, hey, I've got a Mary here. Anyone here called Mary? Do you know an Ethel? Well, she's saying to me, you're not looking after the cat. It was pointing out that is not coming from oneness. That's coming from a non-physical level, not that far from this one vibrationally, of the matrix. And what it was saying is that this five sense level of the matrix, it referred to it as the time loop, because it said this realm of manufactured time was the densest level of the matrix and was therefore the most important to it because of the negative energy that it generated to keep the whole and fuel the whole matrix, which is based on overwhelmingly negative energy. Yeah. And that our belief in time is fundamental to the disconnection from oneness, because oneness is no time. Oneness is just now. There is no past, there is no future, there's just now. And so if oneness is no time, if you believe in the passage of time and you connect to the passage of time and you flow with the belief in this manufactured passage of time, by the very nature, time will disconnect you from no time. And again, when people go into meditative states and they go into this place of stillness, they lose contact with time. They don't know often how long they've been meditating because they're not in the realm of time anymore. And time is a real, real big disconnector. And interestingly, when you look at the history of how the present version of time was created, the Greenwich Mean Time and all this stuff, the very same secret societies that have been involved in the banking system and manipulation of politics and all that over the centuries, they were involved in the creation of time as we experience it in this realm with watches and clocks and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. So how, you're saying that it's a timeless, non-vibrational existence is here and we've just forgotten, as opposed to it being somewhere else?
It's not somewhere else. It's, for instance, if you have implanted into your mind that there's an elephant in the room, the elephant in the room or the elephant not in the room is happening at the same moment. It's not in the room for some people, and it's in the room for you because of the implanted belief, but both are happening at the same time, and they're both happening in the same, quote, space. So it's not that, you know, one's happening before the other, they're both happening together, and simultaneously we are connected to oneness, but our belief, symbolized by there's an elephant in the room when there's not, our belief is that we are not oneness, that I am an individual called David Icke, and I am completely different to you in terms of I'm not connected in any way. You are a totally separate, self-contained entity compared with me. There's nothing between us except empty space, and therefore I am me and you are you, and I am one and you are another, when actually we're both the same one, expressing itself in different ways. So we are one, and this voice in Brazil was emphasizing this. It's not that this realm is not part of oneness, or that oneness, as you put it, is somewhere else. It's the difference is oneness in awareness of itself, oneness not in awareness of itself. And we are in that realm of non-awareness, and that's why we live what we believe to be real, which is division, conflict, and endless parts that do not make a whole. And once you start to realize, like I said earlier, that there is nothing between us except what we believe to be between us, then you start to see the world in a completely different way, and the fault lines that divide and rule us start to fall.
So how do you use this information to start transforming your own world now?
Well, it's a challenge, and you know, I'm not sitting here saying it's easy, because there are different levels of us, and I can go into states of being, especially on a stage, where I go into a completely different state of being, where all these things are self-evident. But that there are other times when you get pulled in to the illusion, and you start reacting to the illusion instead of holding that understanding that that's what it is, it's an illusion. The division's illusion. What the person's saying to you is an illusion.
Free your mind.
And you're interpreting what they're saying in your own way based on your belief. And what I've realized about my own life, and it's made it a real challenge, to be honest, and it's not just me, there are many other people, I'm sure, in the same situation. I called my publishing company when I had to set it up in the mid-1990s because no one would publish my books because of the names I was naming. I called it Bridge of Love, which just came to me out of nowhere. I was thinking, what can I call the publishing company? And playing in the background was that charity song, We Can Build a Bridge Between Your Heart and Mine, Don't You Think It's Time? I think Cher was one of the singers on it. And I thought, Bridge of Love. And what I'm kind of realizing is that part of what I'm doing, a fundamental part of what I'm doing, and I didn't realize it for a long time, is I've got one foot in this world and one foot in another world. One foot in this reality and one foot in the reality I experienced in Brazil. And because, you know, there's a lot of people who are spiritually aware, but they can't connect with the next person to walk past this house because they're somewhere else. And there has to be a bridge between the world we're experiencing that most people think is real and the oneness that we are. There has to be a bridge that people can walk across. So I experience this world very much as a five-sense person. I experience all the emotions, I experience all the frustrations, I experience all the things that everyone else has experienced, and I have done since, of course, since I was born here. But there's another level of me that is increasingly aware that it's all an illusion. And so where my life is taking me now is more and more focusing on this bridge, so that we can bring this awareness of oneness, of the infinite one that we all are, that we are not droplets of water in an ocean even, we are the ocean, and bringing that into people's daily experience, where they are worrying about how to pay the mortgage and worrying about this, worrying about that, pressured to do this, pressured to do that, oh, I can't talk about this, I've got this to do, I've got to survive, and infuse this energy into this realm of experience, which is overwhelmingly about survival. And that's where my focus is taking me now.
See, that makes sense, because that's the thing that keeps us the busiest, the most preoccupied is, yeah, I'd love to talk about all this, you know, conscious stuff, but I've got to go pay the rent.
Yeah, and I remember one of my earlier books, I quoted from a mind control manual that came to light. It was called Silent Weapons for a Quiet War. And it was basically a manual explaining how to control the population through silent weapons, which were the manipulation of their reality. And one of the things in it was keep them busy, 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 back on the farm with the other animals. Keeping us busy. I mean, you know, when I come to America, North America, people often say to me, you know, I have to do two jobs now, or even three, to provide a level of livelihood for my family that one job used to do. And the idea is to keep our heads down, particularly at this time of this awakening that's definitely happening. More and more people are waking up. Waking up from what? Waking up from the hypnotic trance. When we talk about people are waking up and seeing what they couldn't see before, That's literally what they're doing. They are waking up from the hypnotic trance they've been in since they came into this world, and the hypnotists in all their different forms started implanting their sense of reality. And that's why, symbolically, when the hypnotist's fingers are clicked, you suddenly see the world. I experienced this 15 years ago. You suddenly see the world in a completely different way. Why? Because the elephant's not there anymore. And you see it's not there, but everyone around you is saying, yes, it is. And it can be a very challenging time, because they're seeing what you're not seeing, and you're seeing what they're not seeing. So this awakening is literally what the bat waking up.
People seem to be doing that with the media as well. Ever since September 11th, we've had people that see the media in a whole different way. And you know that recent Michael Jackson thing that they showed the cameras, all these cars going over to the ranch, and just before
right.
he was getting arrested. And then I heard one of the reporters said it right in her report that every journalist around the world is now focused on this story. It's the biggest news story. And I thought, oh, so what are they not wanting us to focus on?
Yeah, exactly. What people are becoming more aware of is the way that they're being lied to, or even on that basic level. And what's happening as the awakening unfolds is that things are becoming more and more blatant, in the sense that people are seeing them more clearly now.
Mm-hmm.
What they couldn't see before, they're now seeing, so it increasingly appears to be more and more blatant. And when you've got someone of the intellectual level of George Bush in the White House, he can't really hope to do anything that isn't really blatant, because subtlety is not really in his vocabulary, just like almost every other word. And so you're in a situation now where people are seeing through they're seeing through the veil, they're seeing through the illusion more and more. Without this whole area, Nicole, that we've been talking about here, where do people go from there? You know, I've written, goodness knows how many books now, over the last decade and more, about the conspiracy. I think the last five or six total, some 2 million words. And there comes a point where, okay, 5 cents, manipulation, names, dates, places, connections, okay, there it is. And we don't need to know every detail, and every last detail doesn't have to be 100% accurate, as long as we've got, because this is something that doesn't want to be revealed, so, you know, it can be challenging getting every last thing right. But the whole basis, the whole theme of what's going on, the goal, which is the Orwellian global fascist state, centralized global fascist state, which is what globalization is all about, it's this agenda unfolding, and the way that we are, the techniques they use to manipulate us, problem, reaction, solution, create the problem, offer the solution after you've got the public reaction of do something, at 911 I've just described with that, all these things are now there. What we need to do now is say, hold on, where do we go, how do we change it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we see the problem, now where do we go with this? And it is so this understanding that the problem is just a mind-generated illusion, and therefore so can the way out of here be, is the way that we need to go and we need to focus on. Hey, you know, this world you think is around you, it's inside you, and you know something? You're creating it on what you accept to be real. I mean, things like what we call miracles and stuff like that. Oh, it's miraculous what he's just done. Oh, you can't do that. No, you can't do that if you believe you can't. One of the things that interestingly this voice was saying is there are no laws of physics. There are no laws of science. They're only those that science believes in and people believe in because they believe in science. You know, it kept saying to me, using this technique of, do you think the infinite oneness, would do this? One of the things it said was, do you think the infinite oneness draws a pension? Do you think the infinite oneness gets older? Are you kidding? How can it? It's no time. So why do people in the realm of the five-sense illusion here, why do they get older? Because they believe in it. And everything around them is confirming that that is the way things are. It was pointing out that this realm is actually a hologram, a holographic illusion, and that our bodies are holograms. They're not actually solid. And indeed, if you take a bone, which is the most obvious confirmation that the body is solid, the bone, if you take more and more magnified pictures of it, you find that there actually is no solidity there. It's an illusion. It's just, like I say, made up of atoms and all that stuff, which are empty. And the more and more you magnify it, the less and less solid it becomes. It only appears to be solid to our reality. And he was pointing out that if you take a picture, a holographic picture of someone, and for people who haven't come across holograms, basically what happens is you take a laser light and you shine part of it almost directly onto a photographic print, and you deflect the other half of the laser away across whatever it is you're photographing, a person, an apple, whatever, and then you deflect that back onto the photographic print where it collides with that part of the laser that's gone almost direct. And what this creates is an interference pattern, what you might call a vibrational pattern. And it's the same principle as dropping two stones in a pond. You see the waves going out from the stones, and eventually they start colliding with each other, and they make an interference pattern. Now, that interference pattern in the pond is a wave vibrational expression of the two stones, where they fell, how heavy they were, how powerfully they were thrown, etc. And it's the same with a hologram. That interference pattern on the photographic print carries the vibrational image of whatever it is that you photographed. Now, when you see the photographic print, it's just a series of apparently chaotic lines. It doesn't seem to be anything. But what you do then is you shine the laser onto the photographic print, and suddenly in front of your eyes, or in front of your visual cortex, there is a three-dimensional, apparently three-dimensional image of what's been photographed in front of you. And the best of them, and I've got some pictures of them in time loop, the best of them look as solid as we do. But you can go over and you can put your hands through them, because they are illusions. They only appear to be solid, just like our bodies do. And interestingly, one of the great characteristics, unique characteristics of a hologram, is that every part of a hologram contains a picture of the whole, a smaller picture of the whole. So, for instance, if you take a holographic picture of a person, and you get that photographic print, that interference pattern, and you cut it into four, you shine the laser onto any of the four pieces, you won't get a quarter of the whole picture, you'll get a quarter size depiction of the whole picture. In other words, every single part of the hologram contains a smaller picture of the whole. And it's because the body is a hologram that acupuncture can find a point on the ear that represents every part of the body, that reflexology can do it with the feet and other parts of the body. This is why they can grow a whole body from the information in a single cell. It's because the cell is actually a smaller version of the whole, and therefore contains all the information that the whole contains. It's just a smaller version of it. And this is what the whole basis of so much of alternative healing is based upon, the fact that every part of the body is a smaller version of the whole. Why? Because it's a hologram. And as this voice pointed out in Brazil, it said, you know, if you take a picture of a person, a holographic picture of a person, as long as you hold that laser in place on the photographic print, will that hologram age? No, it will stay the same. So could our holograms, but they don't, because we are subject to a mind version of a software program and a DNA version of a software program that says that there is past, there is present, and there is future, and therefore, as we pass through those illusory states, our bodies are going to reflect that and age as we go into the future. So all these things that we experience as, well, that's the way life is made. People get older. They're illusions. They are generated by our belief in the fact that people get older. And just quickly on that, a lot of research I've done over the years is into the mind control projects, in which they take children at a very early age and they put them through horrendous experiences that turn them into zombies, robots, literally like computers, which they give orders to on a subconscious level with trigger words, that eventual trigger words, trigger colors, whatever the trigger is. And when that trigger is given, that implanted order of behavior will play out, but it won't until you're given the trigger. This is what a lot of assassination programs kill. Now, one of the things that happens in these programs with a lot of them is that they disconnect them from time. I met one lady who was not allowed to have a watch. She was not allowed to know what the date was. She was completely kept from an association with time that we experience, of course, minute by minute through every day. These people who are disconnected from time do not age at anything like the rate that the rest of us do. I talked to this lady. She must have been 40, over 40. She looked about 25, because they are not connected to the belief in time or the awareness of time as the rest of us are. they are not subject to what that belief in time will reflect as, which is aging in relation to the time. So basically, we are caught in a hypnotic trance, which is telling us what to believe, and through that, determining what we experience. The revolution, the road to freedom, is to take control of that process back, so we understand we're creating our own reality. We decide what we accept is real, and not allow an externally implanted belief to dictate our lives.
So what degree do you think we're able to transcend this DNA software, as you call it?
It depends on how powerful we choose to access other levels of consciousness. I've been observing for years now, I've been saying to a number of people over the years, you know, for me, the body programming is what is actually controlling the lives of most people. Someone said to me once how, you know, he was very kind of spiritual, powerful consciousness. He wasn't aware that he was in, you know, the bigger picture of things, but it's clear that he was. Very determined man, very determined to follow his path. And he said to me about how previous generations of his family had been into alcoholism and child abuse, and it had, like incest and stuff, and it had gone through the generations, he said, and it was clearly genetic. He said, but that hasn't happened to me. Why? Because the consciousness that is behind that body, if you like, experiencing that body, is more powerful than the programming of the DNA. Therefore, it can, funnily enough, this voice in Brazil talked about this. It said, imagine the body is the horse and the consciousness animating that body is the rider. In vast numbers of people in this realm, the horse is deciding where to go and what to do. And the rider just sits there and follows it, thinking it's the one making the decisions, when it's just basically, a DNA version of a software program. And there are others who are suddenly waking up and becoming aware, who are starting to say, hey, I'm going to decide where this horse is going. I'm the rider. I've got the reins, really. I didn't realize I have, but I have. I'm now going to decide where this horse is going, not the horse. And it was saying that, again, like I mentioned a few minutes ago, most people are just prisoners of their own body reactions and the inherited traits, rather than consciousness and awareness of itself using the body as a vehicle to experience this realm. The body is basically using the consciousness. Again, we come back to, are we going to live life or let life live us? Well, the body is living us a lot of the time, because it's dictating our reactions and responses instead of the consciousness that should be the governor.
There's been some discussion before on our show, you know, with other people who have kind of bought out of the collective belief on certain things momentarily.
Yeah.
And I'm always wondering, you know, I'm curious where the limit is, or if there is one, or what. I know Stuart Wild, he talked a bit about some bilocation stuff, and some even going through a solid wall at one point on his site. Have you ever had any experiences like that where you were able to?
No, but that's where I want to go. I mean, that's where my focus is now, and that's where I want to go, to start to experience some of these things.
Welcome to the real world.
And of course, going through a solid wall is no big deal. The fact is, you're not walking through a solid wall because the wall isn't solid. What that requires is a disconnection from the massive belief programming that we're all subjected to, not just on what you might call an individual level, but also on the collective level. This is so important. It's what I call consensus reality. The consensus reality is constantly feeding us a version of reality which we can get locked into and believe in, and therefore become subject to the limitations of. There is a collective mind that Carl Jung called the collective unconscious, a level of us where we're all connected, the human species is connected, if you like. And there's a two-way process going on here. We are feeding our beliefs into that, and it collectively is feeding its beliefs into us. And, for instance, if I look out of the window here now, the collective consciousness of everyone in this area where I am will accept that there's a car passing this building. That's the collective consciousness, the collective reality, the collective level of the matrix. But then there's the individual spin, because I might say, I like that car, and someone else might say, I think it's rubbish. So you're putting your individual spin on reality, but the collective reality is all agreed you're looking at a car. And what I understood in Brazil was that I'm not actually looking at a car. I'm looking at a thought form. I'm looking at a vibrational field. And I'm interpreting that vibrational field. Now, I'm interpreting it because of the collective unconscious as a car, but it's actually a vibrational field. And it was interesting that when you look at the Matrix movie, well, all of them really, but particularly the first, you have the people outside the Matrix looking at the computer screens, and they're seeing green words and numbers and codes. That's what's going down the computer screen. But they're not seeing that. They're seeing cars and buildings and streets and people. And when Neo, and of course Neo, what was he called? He was called The One. Neo, he rearranged those letters, it becomes One. The One, Oneness, he's the One. And once you reach that level of true oneness in awareness of itself, then you override the illusory limitations in all their forms of this illusion. And interestingly, again, I'm saying interestingly too often here, but fascinatingly, let's try another word. When Neo in the movie, the first Matrix movie, when he is shot and dies, which is another illusion, and then he overcomes the belief in death and realizes an illusion, suddenly at that moment he doesn't see the agents and the room and the corridor that he's in as a corridor and, you know, solid people. He sees them as codes, like the ones on the computers in the movie. In other words, he has seen beyond the illusion to what it really is, which is a series of vibrational fields, thought forms, which we decode into holographic, apparently holographic reality. And the more that I understand this, I am convinced that actually what enters the, quote, eyes is vibrational fields. And they only get decoded into apparently three-dimensional solid reality by our minds, by our brains. And indeed, the brain is also an illusion if you go to another level of it, you know, which level of illusion you're talking about. And so the only place that this world exists is in our minds. It's not outside of ourselves. And interestingly, what you realize is that in the same way that we have television through something called Fourier transforms, which was a guy that discovered a mathematical process that allows you to take a picture of something, turn it into a waveform, broadcast it in waveform to a television set that decodes it back into pictures. So this mathematical process called Fourier transforms that allows that to happen, what the scientific research has found, is that the brain also works on the same mathematical principles of Fourier transforms from which we get television. In other words, the brain is a frequency decoder. So thought forms, vibrational fields in the realm of illusion enter our eyes, get decoded into holographic images, and then appear, and also get edited in terms of our belief, and appear in the visual cortex as a world we think is around us. And, you know, when I talk about other things, like reptilian shapeshifters and all this stuff that I've written and talked about in the past, and people have thought, that's bizarre. Hold on a minute. That's small deal compared with the fact that there's no world around us, only inside our heads.
You know, it's interesting. I had a weird insight on that, too. You know, when I was learning how to build my website many moons ago, and, you know, you work in HTML code. And when you're working in HTML code, which, again, looks like numbers and letters and funny squiggles,
yeah,
and you click on View in Browser to see what it comes out in, you know, in two-dimensional form, and very similar kind of thing to, you know, the Matrix code and the software you were talking about, is when I made the connection between that and the, you know, how we have periodical tables and for codes for everything,
mm-hmm,
supposedly solid elementals in our world, right? And suddenly thought, oh my God, I'm in a computer program.
We are in a mind version of a computer program. We are. I mean, that Matrix movie, the first one, was so accurate in terms of the reality we're experiencing. And I had I tell a story in Time Loop, which was in a book called The Holographic Universe, excellent book by a guy called Michael Talbot, who experienced this. And it sums up everything we talked about today. He said that his father organized a party for some friends and brought along a stage hypnotist to do party tricks. And he did all the usual things. And he got this guy called Tom, eventually. And he got him to eat a potato, thinking it was an apple. Because, of course, all you have to do is persuade the brain that it's an apple. And the brain, because that's its belief, will experience it as an apple, even though it's a potato. We don't feel pain. We get smacked on the toe. We don't feel pain in the toe, though we think we do. We feel pain in the brain because of the transmission of message from the toe to the brain, and which is why they can cut off some of these messages. They can remove pain. Everything is happening in the brain. And because the body's a hologram, every part of the body has the potential for all the senses of the body. This is why they're finding, as I mentioned in Time Loop, that they can get people to, they're starting to get people to see with their tongues, because every part of the body contains all the five senses, because it's a hologram, and there might be specialist places for five senses, like touch on the skin and all that stuff, but every single part of the body hologram contains all the five senses. This is why they've done experiments where people can see with the palm of their hands and stuff like that. Just activating that potential, that's all it is. It's just dormant in 99.9999% of the people. Anyway, this guy Tom, as he was about to bring him out, he was sitting in a chair, as the hypnotist was about to bring him out of the hypnotic state, he said to him, when I bring you back to a waking state, you're not going to be able to see your daughter. And as he did this, he led the daughter to stand in front of her father. So he's sitting down and he's looking into her midriff. And he brings him out of the trance state, and he says to him, can he see your daughter in the room? And Tom looks around, can't see his daughter, and says, no, she's not here. She's standing in front of him. She starts giggling, but he can't hear her because she's not in his reality. So the hypnotist then goes behind the daughter and pushes something in the small of her back and says to Tom on the other side, what am I holding? So Tom, thinking it was obvious, what's the man, you know, basically talking about? He says, you're holding a watch. So the hypnotist said, there's an inscription on the watch. Can you read it? And the guy leaned forward and read the inscription. Between the watch and Tom is his daughter. And what's happened here is the implanted belief that his daughter is not in the room is editing the information that comes into Tom's eyes, which is his daughter is in the room, vibrational field or whatever. And so by the time the information hits the visual cortex, the daughter is edited out of the movie. And because she's not there, he can see what's behind her in this holographic illusion. Now, what is happening all the time to the global population through the television, through education, and through all the other forms of information that we receive, or what passes for information, is that we are having a collective, massive version of your daughter's not in the room implanted into our minds as a belief. And therefore, 6 billion people are constantly editing information entering the eyes on the basis of what they have accepted to believe is real. We are a population of planet Earth in the same state that the guy Tom was in at the party. And we need to break the spell and realize that not only is our daughter in the room, she's standing right in front of us. And this is why, like I said earlier, when people do wake up, when the fingers are clicked, they say, why didn't I see it before? Why? Because you were editing it before. Now you're not. I remember saying to Kwaito Mutwa years ago, the Zulu shaman, the official historian of the Zulu nation, years ago, before I came across any of this, this is about 98, I said, you know, if these reptilian entities, which he was talking about, are kind of around us, why don't more people see them? Of course, many people do, but why don't more people see them? And he said, this so-called primitive man in the bush of South Africa, he said, because the brain removes them, because they are so at odds with what people believe is real in the world they think they're experiencing, that their brain edits them out, and they don't see them even though they're there. And now I understand more and more about the way this process works. It's very clear and obvious what he was talking about. And we're doing that not just with other entities, non-human entities. We're doing that with the way we see the world in general.
You know, it's funny because we've been getting a lot of questions and callers about that. People that are asking if they think they are seeing something, what should they do? Because they go into fear and they get really upset about it. And we've actually had a lot of email, unbelievably, about that. What should they do?
Well, what this voice in Brazil was telling me is that everything in this realm of duality, this realm of vibration, is illusion, mind-generated illusion. Our bodies, everything around us. Therefore, illusions can only affect you if you believe they are real. So if you give your belief to the fact that these entities can harm you, indeed that these entities are real in the solid sense that we define real, then they can affect you. Just as if you walk through fire, you can get burned if you are in a state of being that believes the fire will burn you. It will. But your foot is an illusion, and the fire is an illusion, and an illusion can only burn an illusion if you believe it can, which is why if you go into another state of awareness beyond that belief, you can walk through fire and not get burned. This is why people like some of the kahuna in the Hawaii and Maui can walk across hot volcanic rock without getting burned. They'll only get burned if they believe they can. And it's not, like I think we started this chat, it's not at an intellectual level. Oh, yes, I know this is an illusion. I read it somewhere, and therefore I shan't get burned. Well, the next thing, if you go into it on that state, will be an enormous scream and someone calling for an ambulance. It's at a level of knowing, which is beyond a level of being, which is beyond the intellect. I mean, the mind is something that controls us in the same way the body, which is a reflection of the mind, controls us. You know, the mind is something that we can use as a tool in our experience of this realm, but it's not something that we use overwhelmingly. It's something that uses us. We are prisoners of the body, prisoners of the mind. One is a reflection of the other anyway. And it's getting to that core oneness in awareness of itself, what we call spirit, that overrides the ignorance but control through ignorance of the mind. And when people say to me now, what should I believe? First of all, it's none of my business, but if you want an answer to that, believe nothing. Don't believe anything. Belief is a manifestation of mind, and mind compared with spirit is ignorant and stupid and programmed to operate the way it does. If we can integrate mind, body and spirit, that's great, because we're in a situation of oneness, but in its fragmented form, mind is a software program. And it's not about believing anything, it's about being everything. And I know, you know, the words don't exist to really describe what I'm talking about. It's something that you experience rather than you can describe. But I entered that realm in the Brazilian rainforest where I was not my mind. I just was. And one of the things, for instance, that mind must do is to give names for everything. Duality wants to put tags on everything. What are you? I'm a so-and-so. Oh, right, I feel comfortable now. And I have this philosophy, if you can put a name to what you believe, if you put a name to what you are, more accurately, then you're in a prison, because everything just is. And it's not that you go into a place of no non-existence because you cease to think or you cease to have inspiration. It's a place that is beyond thought. You don't think it, you know it. And like I say, the vocabulary is not there to really describe and encapsulate what I'm trying to say here, but it's beyond thought. It is knowing. Being, even more important. And then, when we reach that point, we can unleash the full, infinite, creative, knowing, wisdom, loving potential that we all have, instead of putting this prison wall up called mind and belief that disconnects us from this point of infinity.
Wow. Well, you know, we're coming down to the end of our time limit. Oh, well, that's an illusion.
Okay.
But under the illusion of the time,
yeah,
we're coming to the end of it.
It's kind of funny, just very quickly. I think Einstein said something along the lines of, if time is basically decided by the observer. He said something like, if you're in the company of a beautiful woman, time seems to pass very quickly. But, you know, your finger's in a boiling saucepan, it seems to pass very, very slowly. They weren't his words, but that was his point. And it's interesting that when I was a newsreader on radio years and years ago, back in the 70s, we used to do these news bulletins on the hour, and often it was in the last, like, 5 minutes when the news bulletin was put together. And I was in a newsroom, and I had to walk down one corridor, turn left, go down another corridor to sit in the news booth to read the news, and it was live, and that microphone was going live on the hour, whether anyone was there or not. And I remember some guy saying to me, a New Zealand journalist who worked there, he said, you know, whether you panic or whether you stay calm, that clock ticks the same. You've still got 2 minutes to go in on air, whether you panic or whether you stay calm. The difference is, he says, if you stay calm, the time seems to pass slower. And it is all relative. You know, you sit in a waiting room waiting to go to the dentist. Time passes in a very different way than if you're doing something extremely enjoyable. It's all about the way we observe time. Therefore, we can control time.
Well, I have to say, every time you and I talk, the time flies by in no time. So, having said that, before we go, actually, you are speaking in a couple of locations coming up.
Yeah, I think it's June the 12th. I'm on Maui, talking there all day, as usual, about 600 illustrations in which I go through the whole A to Z of the story, including going into detail of the stuff we've been talking about today, as well as all the five-sense manipulation that is becoming more and more obvious every day. And then on June 19th, I'm speaking all day at the Pasadena Civic Auditorium in Los Angeles. And there's 3,000 seats in that theater. So what we're trying to do is take this onto another level of communication and get, you know, the biggest audience that I've spoken to so far in LA on June the 19th. So we'll see how it turns out. But this needs to go onto another level of communication now, so that we can start to move into an understanding that the controllers only control us because we allow them to. And even more important, the controllers only control us because we think they do. And believe they do. They don't. If we believe they don't, and we believe they have no power over us, they don't.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Well, I wish you the best. As soon as you go on to that next level, transcending through solid walls, I'm hoping that you call me.
Right. Well, when you see someone walk through the door without opening it, you'll know it's me.
So, oh, there's David. Okay.
You know, there's a lot of deprogramming to happen before that happens, but it's there to be done. Beyond belief is where we need to go, and it's a whole new state of being. And I'm not claiming to be there yet, but I am saying that's where I want to head as rapidly as possible.
Well, I'll be trailing along with the microphone. That sounds great. I thank you so much for spending some time with us today, David.
Pleasure, Nicole. Always is.
All the best. Talk to you again soon.
Okay.